Well, stay tuned. Coming up on the local news hour this morning, I'm scheduled to talk with Jeff Gochnauer with Dakota Pacific. The property owner of the Tech Park property there at Kimball Junction has an update on their project, and we'll discuss the online open house set for tomorrow. Later on, Park City Education Association co-president Julie Hooker responds to the news that teachers and district staff will receive no pay raises this year and that teacher negotiations have been suspended. Finally, Snyderville Basin Recreation District Director Brian Hanton will be on the phone along with strategic plan consultant Lisa Benson. They've got details about an upcoming public input meeting to talk more about the new strategic action plan. Well, KPCW has been taking a look at diversity in winter sports. In part two of the series, KPCW Sean Higgins tells us of two Park City organizations hoping to make a difference.
Diego Zagara is the Community Impact Director for the Park City Community Foundation and has dedicated much of his professional life towards the advancement of social equity in the Beehive State. Zagara says that as social unrest grips the country and protests against racial injustice sweep through Utah, people's fundamental perceptions about racism in America have also been challenged.
For a while, our understanding of racism has been fairly narrow, and we could identify it and point at it whenever an overt act of racism was committed. We were less good at identifying the systemic or institutional racism that exists and translates into worse outcomes for communities of color. Saying I'm not racist, it's too narrow of a focus. The conversation should revolve more around we live in a system that has systemic racism. It's within us. And it expresses and manifests itself in our institutions, in our programs, in the way laws are enacted, so on and so forth.
Zagara helps oversee the foundation's Solomon Fund, which has been in place since 2016 and aims to facilitate access to sports and recreational opportunities for underprivileged children in the local community. Through a combination of community outreach and providing transportation, scholarships, and gear, the fund has made significant strides towards minority participation in the various programs offered in Park City. The goal is to mirror the percentage of minority students in the school district, which is about 20%. Since 2018, the foundation has also partnered with the Park City Municipal Corporation to tackle the city's social equity initiative. Affordable housing, cost of living, access to services, political representation, and education are just a few of the issues important to local underrepresented communities. Park City-based U.S. Ski and Snowboard is also thinking of equity in their community. The organization's president and CEO, Tiger Shaw, announced this week that steps will be taken to refresh hiring practices at the Center of Excellence in order to attract a more diverse pool of candidates for open positions. U.S. Ski and Snowboard underwent an extensive initiative in 2017 and 2018 to address issues of gender disparity at the organization, a position Shaw believes leaves them well prepared for this challenge.
So we learned through our gender diversity effort that just because you might have, let's say, a neutral population of applicants that is not very diverse, you have to proactively seek the diverse components. Number one, get them to apply, and then number two, to really dive deep into them as candidates and make sure you find ways to hire them.
U.S. Ski and Snowboard will also be hosting a virtual town hall for athletes to voice their thoughts and concerns on these issues on June 18th and pledge to work with local nonprofits and their member clubs across the country to introduce underrepresented youth to winter sports. Despite the good sentiment and actions by major players in the community, Zagara stresses that it is outcomes and not promises that should be the real measure of success.
I think that applying an equity lens to our work really would include looking at the outcomes and asking ourselves, what outcomes are we seeking? There will be wins along the way, but this is forever kind of work. And it takes the full commitment of organizations to address the systems that are in place that have resulted in inequitable outcomes for some communities and full on address that.
To learn more about the Solomon Fund or social equity efforts in Park City, visit parkcitycf.org. Sean Higgins, KPCW News.
8:14 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the public is invited to learn more about the plans for the property formerly known as the Park City Tech Park at Kimball Junction. The property owner, Dakota Pacific, has a new website, an online survey, and a second online open house is set for tomorrow afternoon. On the phone with details, I have the project's representative, Jeff Gochnauer. Good morning to you, Jeff.
Good morning, Leslie. How are you this morning?
I'm well, thanks. So why don't you first just talk a little bit about your company, Dakota Pacific, and why the company decided to purchase this property?
Dakota Pacific is a actually a real estate investment fund, but it has a real estate development arm of which I am a part. And we have looked, I worked prior to my company merging with Dakota Pacific. I worked for Cottonwood Partners, and we've done development up in the Park City area. We did the three office buildings at New Park, where Skull Candy was for a period of time, Rossignol resides. And so we've done development in the area before, and had always had our eye on the Park City Tech Center because we knew it had been entitled in 2008, but it seemed like it had struggled getting any traction with the research park concept. So we had been in conversation with the Boyer Company over those years to say if they ever had any interest in selling it or doing something else, we'd be interested in talking to them. And that's sort of how it all came into play.
All right. So is your plan to actually develop the property once you get the entitlement, or is it that, you know, Dakota Pacific gets the entitlement and then sells the development off?
No, our intent is to be a long-term owner and to be the developer of the project. We don't view this as being a quick transaction that we'll build something and then flip it. We're going to be in this for the long haul. We'd love to hold this forever if we could, because we think it's such a fantastic site and perfect location.
All right. So, I mean, basically what it seems like what we've seen change is a tech park where the intent was to have high-paying jobs and had about 150 market-rate units in there. What's changed is that we now have a hotel there at West End. We're talking a little bit of square footage for office and commercial, but about 1,100 residential units. Is that a fair assumption, you know, fair description there?
Yeah, well, we're, just to go back a little bit on the history, when it was entitled late 2008, it was, as you mentioned, entitled for a research park. The timing, I suppose, was unfortunate because we all know what was happening in 2008 with the economy. And so, in fairness to the Boyer Company, it was difficult to get anything started just because of the economic challenges at that time. I think Tech Park was a logical use if you know, the county was motivated to try and get some high-paying jobs in the area. At the time, the University of Utah Research Park was effectively built out, and so the question was, where would the next where would be a next good location for a tech park? But as we've seen, they have not been able to develop much of anything in the intervening 8 to 10 years. And in that period of time, a lot of tech development occurred in South Salt Lake County or North Utah County, where Adobe and others decided to put their locations. And so that area became a hotbed for tech and research, and it just passed by this site. And it you know, really created a center for research and tech, as we now know it as Silicon Slopes. So we've been looking carefully at what the objectives are of the county, looked at the, you know, the Summit County Plan, the Snyderville Basin Plan, the Kimball Junction Neighborhood Master Plan. And in all cases, you know, there was a big emphasis on providing workforce housing. And, you know, a challenge that Kimball Junction has is that most of the people that work in Kimball Junction or even Park City are commuting up from the valley. And we've been told that between 60 and 70% of workers are commuting. And that, in part, is what creates a challenge in that area. And so by providing housing, both workforce housing and market housing, we think it'll give the opportunity for these people that are commuting up from the valley to live. If they live in this, the residential component of our project, we're right at the transit center. I don't know why they would ever, and they work in Park City. I don't know why they would ever drive in. They just hop on the electric bus and commute. So we feel that there's a benefit to housing because it'll help take cars off the road. And it satisfies one of the objectives of the county to provide housing, in particular workforce housing.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because I see in the promotional materials that this is a development where residents wouldn't need cars to get to and from work, but they still need cars. I mean, right? I mean, they still want to go to Moab. They want to go to the Uinta Mountains. They want to go to Costco. I mean, talk more about this idea that people won't have cars, because, I mean, it just, not having a car really doesn't work, especially if you wanted to go visit a friend at Jeremy Ranch. You know, you live at Kimball Junction, you got a friend in Upper Jeremy Ranch. I mean, how do you get there without a car?
Well, I wasn't suggesting that they wouldn't have cars. I was suggesting that if I lived there and I worked in Park City, I'd probably hop on the bus to go back and forth to work. I would still likely have a car to visit friends and drive down to the valley, as you say, to Costco or wherever. But I would take advantage of the transit rather than have to deal with traffic or other challenges. People will still have cars, but I think they would also take advantage of the transit rather than having to come up with from the valley and not really having an option. It doesn't make sense for them to stop at the park and ride once they're in their car and take a bus in. They're just going to drive in if they can.
So a traffic study has been conducted, I think, done by your company, that shows that the peak traffic flow from the built-out tech park would have more than this mixed-use project you're now proposing. Explain that to me, if you can.
Well, it's because, in part for the reason I just suggested, that if you've got fewer people commuting up and they live in our project, they're going to likely be taking transit in, but it's also the diverse use mix of uses proposed in our project. So peak hour is the morning rush hour, say from 7 to 9, and the evening rush hour, say from 4 to 6. And so when you have an office, a heavy office research component, people are commuting to work at the same times. So they'll be coming in the morning en masse, and they'll be leaving at the same time after work in the evening en masse. In our case, where we have, we do have what I would call a fairly significant office component, roughly 180,000 square feet of office. So we will have office uses and job opportunities in these office buildings, but the residential component allows the traffic to be dispersed throughout the day. They're there. They live there. Their cars are there. And so their traffic is going to be throughout the day. If you have someone who works, like I said, they'll likely be taking transit. They may work, but you may have a spouse or a young family. And, you know, their trips may be to school or to the grocery store or to an afternoon dance lesson. So it's dispersed more throughout the day, and it's not as it's not necessarily in the peak hour of traffic for the workforce.
So the project has changed. From the project that you had presented to the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission in the late months of last year, then the total square footage then exceeded the square footage of the Boyer Tech Park. Now we're back kind of to that Boyer level. So was that done just to try and eliminate the need to meet that clause of 2.3, some compelling critical needs in order to get that additional square footage?
No, that was not the purpose of that change. When we started this project, we included the county parcel on Youth Boulevard and 224 in our plan. And the reason is because we own a parcel in between the Park City Visitor Center building and the county parcel. And we thought, you know, it might make sense to utilize our parcel in between, connect it to the county parcel, and look at this as an opportunity to make a very robust transit center. And so we included that parcel with the idea that we would down the road at some point work out some kind of agreement that we could help expand the transit center, and they would take some land within our property to build a new county center, if you will. They'd like a county presence there that is more user-friendly and allows for county gatherings and events. And so that was the idea that, that we were planning, we were looking at this project holistically for the long term on what could happen if we were work together. But as we were going through the discussions with the Planning Commission and others, this idea of using that county parcel really complicated the whole process. And there was a question of, well, okay, when are you going to buy that? Where are you going to pay for it? Where's the county building going to go? And it just added a level of complication that made, getting through the Planning Commission process and the other processes really more difficult. So we just decided, let's just make our proposal on the land that we own, and recognizing that there was a lot of interest in really making a significant transit center on that county parcel. And we'll do everything within our power to still allow that to be an option. It just isn't something that's going to be completely defined today. So it leaves open the option, but we don't have to have it finalized and understood completely today.
All right. I wanted to make sure that we mentioned there's an online open house. It's happening tomorrow from 2 to 3:30 p.m. An open house format is generally informal in person. People mill around exhibits and ask questions. How are we going to do that on this online meeting format?
Just a clarification. I believe that's from 2:30 to 4, if I'm not mistaken.
All right. I may be seeing an old announcement here.
Hang on, let me just look. We had, so maybe best to answer that question, Leslie. We had one on Thursday, last Thursday.
From 5:30 to 7?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
And it went great. It was a Zoom meeting. I took time at the front to discuss our plan and our proposal. And then we just opened it up to a Q&A. I'm sorry, by the way, I just checked. It is 2 to 3:30. I was misinformed. But anyway, so we opened it up to questions at the end, and we took them. They could actually speak, or we also had a Q&A option or chat where people could submit their questions, and we would respond to them that way. And I think it went really well. We had great questions, and it was a great opportunity for us to inform those who participated about our project. There's been a question, well, why aren't we just having a regular open house? But we're really sensitive to this COVID-19 situation, and recognize Summit County was hit pretty hard right out of the gates, and there's some, we're just erring on the side of caution. And so from that standpoint, I think our first one was successful, and we're planning to have the one tomorrow. And then and our next meeting before the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission will be June 23rd, and that will be a public hearing as well. So the public can come out. That will be a Zoom meeting also. But we'll just have a conversation with the Planning Commission at that time, and it will be open to public comment.
Yeah, when's the earliest you think you can get a Planning Commission recommendation on this?
That's a good question. I think now that we're entering the public comment phase, I'm hoping that that we could maybe have some direction from the Planning Commission within the next 60 days. And so that's, it's hard to say how long this process takes. As you mentioned earlier, we started last August and we're still going.
Okay. All right. Anything else you wanted to mention, Jeff?
No, thanks for your time, Leslie. I appreciate you providing this forum for us to address our project. It's something that we're really excited about. As I said earlier, we think it meets what the county envisions for this site, and we're really enthusiastic and excited about creating a world-class project right at the gate to Kimball Junction and Park City.
All right, and I just would encourage people, they can go online to heykimballjunction.com. There they can see kind of project specifics there, and again, an online open house that can take place again tomorrow, June 16th, 2 to 3:30 p.m. Again, you can visit the website for more information. Jeff, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks.
Thanks, Leslie.
Jeff Gochnauer with Dakota Pacific, the proposed developer there of the Tech Park. 8:31 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we've reported, the Park City Board of Education has made the decision to suspend teacher negotiations and alerted all of its staff, including teachers, that there will be no pay raises this next year. That was done according to a letter sent out last week of the anticipated budget reductions for public education in Utah, which means that the Park City School District budget will have to be cut as much as 10%, resulting in about a $3 million loss in state funding. On the phone with some reaction, I have the co-president of the Park City Education Association, Julie Hooker. Good morning.
Hi, Leslie. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so you and your co-president, Amanda Lawling, have responded to the school board's decision, also via a letter. Talk to us a little about the reaction from teachers when they received this letter in their inbox last week.
Oh, boy. They were taken aback. We were taken aback. We have a long history with the Park City School District Board of Education with interest-based bargaining, and the board simply walked away from that interest-based bargaining. This decision was made unilaterally, even though we were engaged in good faith negotiations at the time. And, I listened on Friday when you spoke to Board President Kaplan, and you asked why it happened outside of negotiations, and he didn't respond. So now teachers are simply wondering why they left the table. We are well aware of what is happening. We see the unemployment, but with the school board away from the table, we can't even discuss it.
So can contract negotiations be severed unilaterally like that? I mean, one party can just get up and say, we're not talking anymore?
It's unprecedented, and that's part of why we're so confused. We believe that this decision was unwarranted and premature. So first, this and any budget cuts initiated by the board are going to be devastating for our students. We know that the greatest determining factor in success for kids is the relationship that they have with the safe adults in their school buildings. And we have always put our students first, and we will always put our students first. However, this hiring freeze that they discuss equates to a reduction in force. Class sizes will likely increase. Teachers will be stretched beyond capacity. We've been spending the last several weeks trying to plan for going back in the fall when our kids are going to have, at the elementary level, best case scenario, 6 to 7 month deficits. So we have to reteach content and then help them learn the skills and knowledge for the 2021 school year. These cuts mean students may not get the necessary attention to address these gaps in the skills. They even noted in the letter that they sent to staff that the higher expectations mean each unfilled position represents additional work that must be shouldered by the employees who remain. Another point is that the state legislature meets in special session on the 18th and 19th. That gives us, according to the budget on the website, that gives us an additional 10 days to work through whatever cuts actually happen in that state session. The budget, according to the document on the school district website, is not due until June 29th. We cannot automatically assume such drastic cuts in education spending are going to be necessary because we don't understand the full impact of the current budget. Revenue numbers have not been released, and the state legislature has yet to provide the budget recommendations or guidance to school districts. And, you know, again, Leslie, we understand budget cuts, and we just don't think these cuts should be made prematurely. Walking away from that interest-based bargaining hurt morale.
Yeah. I want to kind of reel you back because you just mentioned a lot of things here. Is it that they can't, why is it that you cannot continue to negotiate? Because you still need a contract, don't you? Even if there's no pay raise in it? I mean, isn't a contract...
Yeah, we are able to work without a contract, and several years ago, that's what happened. I think everybody worked without a contract until January. We could absolutely continue negotiations, and we are asking humbly and sincerely that the board and the superintendent reconsider this premature move and wait until we have the guidance from the legislature, which will come as soon as the end of the week. Once the budget picture becomes more clear, we can then together address the actual shortfalls and any necessary cuts in a regular negotiations meeting.
And you'd also mentioned the unfilled positions won't be filled. Are we talking teacher positions? Is that why you're saying that class sizes would go up?
Yes. The resignations that we have from this year, the people that retired this year, those positions, unless they are essential, for example, a dual immersion teacher has to be hired, but other positions are not being hired. And that means there's added strain, increased class sizes. And, you know, again, Leslie, I want to take a moment and just do a huge shout out to the Park City Education Association teachers. They stepped up to the plate with COVID. They overnight worked 24/7 to engage, encourage, and support our students by redesigning their curriculum so it could be delivered virtually. They visited students at home. We even had teachers that were sending Venmos to students saying, go get lunch. Okay, we learned the real inequities because we saw home environments. We learned why our kids weren't able to do their work during the day. They were taking care of younger siblings. They were working at Devon's, the market, and the Beehive Care Center just to pay the rent. Or some of our kids had both parents working from home and the internet bandwidth didn't support their school access. So really, distance learning turned into 24/7. And we know that socially and emotionally, these kids are going to be behind come fall.
And how big of a challenge is that?
Oh, it's huge. It is huge. So, for example, we were instructed to, you know, provide no grades, which is essentially the opportunity. It's an NG on the report card. And the numbers of NGs of students having to make up fourth quarter are astronomical. I also know that, you know, for my classes, for my senior class and for my class of juniors this year, we're already designing. I mean, we're still working. We're working with each other and we're designing formative assessments to see what we need to reteach so that we can start teaching next year's curriculum. At the elementary level, oh my gosh. I mean, you've seen what it's like to have a Zoom meeting with adults. Can you imagine a Google Meet with 24 first graders?
No, but...
No. our students, and they say at the elementary level, you know, the lag is going to be even greater. So we're just struggling to hang on. And this was, you know, this was a huge kick to our morale after, you know, here we are, we've got signs in our yards from the PTSOs telling us how much they appreciate us as educators. And then this.
Yeah. And what we heard from the board president last week is that it would just be fiscally irresponsible of the board, you know, to make promises that they couldn't keep. I mean, and it makes no sense. I know that there has been some talk, oh, well, there's a rainy day fund, and that's what a rainy day fund is for. Do you understand why they can't offer raises at this point?
I don't. And I want to stress the fact that teachers have not had a cost of living increase in 3 years. And this really is, you know, they say that it's salaries aren't being cut, but salaries are being cut. The salary educators were promised and expected by following their schedule is being cut. They are cutting $700,000, the cost of a step, with this salary freeze. And I don't understand, because I've heard two dates for when the budget is due. I've heard the budget is due to the state by the 22nd, and then in their documents it says the 29th. That gives us, you know, 5 days or 10 days to keep at it to figure out what we can do. I also don't understand the pie graphs included in the budget, where if only 6.43% of our budget comes from the state, why would cuts have to be this drastic? But even more than that, we have zero direction from the state. They said it's either 2%, 5%, or 10%. Mr. Hauber prepared the budget that's linked to the website with a 2% increase. So essentially, we would just be going back this year's budget if the legislature says cut 2%. I think more than fiscal irresponsibility, it's the hurt and the concern that has been heightened by just walking away from our interest-based negotiations that have worked so well for so long.
So,
you know, one of our – go ahead.
I was just going to say, going into negotiations this year, I mean, it was looking pretty optimistic after the state legislature approved, what, a 6% increase in the WPU?
Mm-hmm. It was very optimistic. And again, with interest-based negotiations, we come to the table and we decide what we have in common, and we work toward those goals. One of the shared interests that we have is making sure that our educators feel valued. And this letter did not enforce that value.
So any response from the district office or the Park City School Board to the letter that you sent them?
Yes. Mr. Kaplan did respond and said that they, you know, they understand how we feel, and they are committed, they have voted, they have decided that this is the route that they're going to follow. We do have a board meeting tomorrow at 4 o'clock. I will be making a statement, and I'm hoping that all five members of the board are there and can discuss it. Because, you know, this is, they've had this meeting on their agenda for well over a year, and hopefully everybody will be there and can have this conversation and get us back to our interest-based bargaining.
So it sounds like we do allow people to show up at the meeting. I see on the agenda at 5 o'clock, public comment. Community members will be required to wear a mask and observe the required 6-foot social distancing. So we may need to take turns if you get a big crowd out there, huh?
Right. And, you know, I don't know with the increase in, you know, and this is the other thing. As teachers, we were talking about it, and here we have our custodians that have been in those buildings, that have been cleaning our buildings and keeping all of us safe. And I can't imagine how demoralizing this was for everybody, from our administrators, you know, our principals have shown up day after day after day. They have, I mean, it's just, it's devastating to morale.
Okay, I need to leave it there. I do want to let people know, though, that, the, as you mentioned, the Park City Board of Education meeting at 4 o'clock. The public comment starts at 5 o'clock. Comments can also be submitted via email to lpearce, P-E-A-R-C-E, at pcschools.us. The budget hearing itself will be taking place at 6 o'clock, and they are scheduled to adopt the revised budget for this year as well as a preliminary budget for next year. Anything else you wanted to mention, Julie?
Well, I understand that they're going to go item by item on this budget, and so I really encourage people to show up. You know, remember that our funding comes primarily from property taxes, and that hasn't been impacted. So again, that's another reason why this is premature. Just show up, make your voice heard, and, you know, as we always do, we're going to get our kids back on track. And we, you know, shout out to parents that were our co-teachers during COVID.
Okay. Julie Hooker is the co-president of the Park City Education Association. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie. Have a great day.
Well, Basin Recreation is updating its strategic action plan. On the phone to tell us what that plan looks like and to make sure that residents' desires are being met, I have the director of the Recreation District, Brian Hanton, along with the district's strategic action plan consultant, Lisa Benson from Landmark Design. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning, Leslie.
You there as well, Lisa?
I am.
Okay, great.
Good morning.
First, let's just note that a public input session will be held this week, June 18th, to discuss this draft plan and to receive feedback. You're going to do that via Zoom. Brian, where can people get information to join in?
They can find it on our website, basinrecreation.org. If you go to our events tab, it'll kind of be a brief explanation of what to expect. But also, I mean, you can look at some of the information that we plan on sharing at the meeting on Thursday.
Okay. When was the last time we did a strategic plan?
2013 was the last time we did it.
Okay. And why is this, maybe you can just talk a little bit about what a strategic plan is and why it's important that you hear from residents.
One of the big things that we recognized from the survey that we did in 2013 is, I mean, taking all of the information that we had as far as the community survey, the facility demand study, and getting a pulse of what the community is looking for. When we did this in 2013, there was 10 items that were listed as top things that we needed to or help implement into the community. We were able to knock off 7 of those with, I mean, cardio weights, courts, basketball courts, lap lanes, group fitness, trails and trailheads, outdoor lap lanes, and off-leash dog areas. And these were all things that the community was looking for, and that's why we want to go through this process again, knowing how much our community has changed over the last 5 to 6 years, and just wanted to get another pulse of where they're at and what they're looking for.
All right, Lisa, the document is 156 pages long. What should people read to kind of get to the meat of the document?
Yeah, so the bulk of that page number is actually the appendix. So that's a lot of the detailed survey information if people want to dig into that. The meat of the plan is about 50 pages. And if you want to get to the heart of it, I would dive into the section. It is, I believe, Chapter 6, and that's where we get into the priorities and how these different facilities were scored and how this the different information from the needs assessment and the survey, all this other information kind of feeds into the process and how that ended up giving us new information on what the updated priorities for residents are at this point in time.
So how did we get this? How did you get the information about what people are looking for?
So Y2 Analytics did a survey with the community last year. That was a joint effort with Park City and Basin Recreation. But for this process, we were able to filter out the responses from Basin Recreation residents only. So we have updated survey information that is representative of the district as a whole. And that's also, as Brian mentioned, we also have information from a study done by Zions Public Finance that looks at program-specific needs, looking at facilities that are needed to help meet program needs in the district. So the previous plan also had this scoring matrix where we took all this information and fed it into this objective scoring process. And this time around, we took a look at those criteria and updated them based on kind of new information. And the previous study was Park City and the district. And this study is focusing just on Basin Recreation. So we were able to really hone in on what Basin Recreation residents are looking for. And this scoring priorities matrix gives us an objective way to look at what residents want and also factor in other items like seasons served and making sure that we get the most flexible facilities for our money.
So can you talk anything about how this strategic plan changes from the existing strategic plan? I mean, could we have just kind of kicked out the stuff that we've finished and then just roll everything else up? Or does it look different than what people wanted in 2013?
There are some differences, and it is interesting. You know, as Brian mentioned, the district has been able to implement a lot of those facilities that were priorities in the last plan. But what is interesting is that some of those facilities are still desired by residents and still came up as scoring high in this newer study. Things like the indoor multi-purpose fields and also outdoor multi-purpose fields are still important. But there are also some items that came up as more important more recently, like climbing walls, outdoor pickleball courts. Some of those items kind of rose to the top. As Brian said, as they meet priorities, they can continue to see what new needs arise and focus on those newer needs.
All right. Brian, do we have space for a new indoor, multi-purpose field or more outdoor pickleball courts?
There's potential with Silver Creek Village. Is still, there's a wide variety of things that we could do on that property. I mean, we have about 100 acres of park space that we are looking to implement, and we're continuing to look for different areas of opportunity, if it be recreational open space, that we can have some facilities in areas. Silver Creek Village is definitely an open site of different things that we can do.
And what I haven't heard either of you mention is just more ice rink space. What about that?
This time around, it's still on our list of things, and we're working with the city. We're continuing. There's a private entity that's still in the works of developing a two-sheet rink by the Black Rock development. And so we're hoping that continues to fruition, and it's only a mile away from the existing ice rink. So that's kind of our plan, is to hope that continues.
All right. What about the plans then for the Triangle parcel as well as the rest of the Gilmore open space there along the U.S. 40 corridor?
A lot of that space, we do have a planned trailhead and some trails through there. But as far as facility goes, there's a lot of restrictions based on some of the contaminants that are in the soils or from the history of the mining days. We've worked with the EPA, and we have some ideas of what we can do there. But right now, we don't have facilities planned in that area. It's more trails and trailheads.
All right. And so once we have a strategic plan, then what?
Then it's kind of working with the community, figuring out funding for areas through bonds, potentially grants. Our staff has been very successful in receiving some grants, our capital budget, and through community partners, and just trying to find different ways that we can implement these these facilities if possible.
All right. So is there room to change this plan? I mean, because I know that you're hope to make a public presentation this Thursday. I mean, is it for input, or is it, I mean, again, you've done kind of all of the research at this point. Is it pretty much good to go?
I mean, I think for the most part, we have, I mean, we, with our advisory committee, our board, I mean, we've had a lot of discussions, but we're still open for public input. And if there's areas that maybe we were missing out on, or people hadn't participated in the scoping sessions or gone onto the website to provide their comments, we've taken all that over the last 6 months as far as implementing and setting up this plan. But we're still open to ideas if the community has some other ideas that they want to try to have it within our organization.
Okay, so when and where is this Thursday presentation happening?
It's via Zoom, so it's on Thursday from 6 to 8, and on our website you can find all of the Zoom information, and we hope that the community logs on, and if they have some comments, they can do it at the Zoom meeting, or if they just go on our website, there's other areas that you can put your comments on as well.
Okay. Lisa, anything you'd like to add to this?
I just think it's been a really good process this time. It has been more challenging with COVID, so we would make sure to encourage people to get online, download a copy of the draft plan, read through, give us your input. We're definitely still open at this point in time to any feedback from the community.
Okay. Lisa, I appreciate your time. Brian, I know you wanted to mention one more opportunity tomorrow about the Future of Our Trails meeting happening as well.
Yes. We have another public opportunity to share some comments. We recognize the popularity of our trail system, and working with the county and Mountain Trails, we're setting up a webinar type of forum to just discuss some of the issues that we've been working on. We know trailheads that are within neighborhoods have been some challenges recently, or have been for a little while. But our focus would be on transportation and figuring out opportunities to get people to these trailheads without maybe cars, some dispersal as far as spreading out the trail users, making them aware of other areas where they could recreate, and then looking at behaviors and potential regulations within the system, just with our courtesy campaigns, using trail ambassadors to help spread the word, just to help limit some of the challenges that a lot of those trailheads within the neighborhood are facing.
Okay, Brian Hatton and Lisa Benson, appreciate your time this morning.
Thanks, Leslie.
You've been listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW Park City. Stay tuned. Coming up, we've got Mountain Money. Right now, 43 degrees here in Old Town, or actually 50 degrees here in Old Town Park City. Looking for mostly sunny skies today with a high of 76. Partly cloudy tonight, 51 is the overnight low. Tomorrow, 69 a high of, with a 30% chance of a afternoon and evening thunderstorm. Cooling off Wednesday with a high of just 58 and temperatures about 35. So that's pretty darn cold Thursday morning. Back to some sunshine and a warming trend then for Thursday and Friday. This is KPCW Park City. It's 9 o'clock. News is next.